Welcome to those of you who have come. So you're joining me, Patty Whitfler, and Chris White, MD, for our teleseminar on Dads Make a Difference, the importance of fathers in helping kids flourish. And I'm going to introduce Chris in just a couple of minutes. What I want to do is tell you just a bit about hand-in-hand parenting. So I'm Patty Whitfler, and I'm the founder and the program director at Hand in Hand Parenting. And we exist to support parents well. We have a particular parenting approach that has changed the lives of many thousands of parents. And so we're talking about that. It's really a very simple shift from trying to control children's behavior, although sometimes one does need to do that, to trying really focusing on connecting with our children in order to win their hearts and in order to have, you know, really heart-to-heart influence over them and how their lives go. So the focus on connection we do through listening tools that we teach. We teach parents how to listen well to children, and being listened to really does win one's heart. As you know, if you've ever been listened to, it really gets people connected with one another, and when they're connected, things do go better. And the other insight that we carry is that children's emotions, their crying and their tantrums and their laughter when they're playing good and hard, all are useful. All of these are not throwaway behaviors. And we sort of show parents how to go with children when they're in an emotional state rather than try to drive against them, thinking that they're being bad or disrespectful or defiant if they're having a tantrum or having a good cry. We see the shedding of emotions as the shedding of inner tension that lets people then get connected better. So we're a nonprofit organization, and we do these teleseminars to try to support you. And our goal is for every parent to have the information and support they need to be able to put their head down on the pillow and go, wow, that was a hard day, but it was a good day. Like, that's that kind of assurance that you know what the most important focus of parenting is, and you have tools with which to do that. That's what we want for parents. So with that, I'm going to introduce Chris White. We're really very fortunate to have him with us tonight talking about how dads make a difference. He's an MD. He's a board certified pediatrician and a parent educator and the father of two boys. So he's in the trenches with the rest of us. He's the creator and the director of Essential Parenting, an organization that emphasizes the psycho-emotional and spiritual development of children and their parents. He's also the co-author of Mindful Discipline, a loving approach to setting limits and raising an emotionally intelligent child. So, Chris, I'm really delighted to have you talk to us tonight. And I'll give you the floor for now, and I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the tools and ideas that we have at Hand in Hand Parenting that might dovetail with what you're going to say about fathers, and then we'll open it up for questions until, somewhere around 30 or 40 minutes past the hour. So, Chris, thank you for being here.
Hey, Patty. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And it's great to speak with all of you tonight. I thought what I'd talk about tonight is the gifts and challenges of fatherhood. The way I've been feeling about it recently is that fatherhood is kind of a perfect storm. Actually parenthood on the whole, so mothers and fathers. It's kind of a perfect storm. We're kind of being asked to pop to a whole new level here. There's so many ways that we're not getting our needs met all of a sudden. We definitely get less sleep than we used to, at least most of us do. There's less time for self-care, less energy for self-care, exercise and things like that. We certainly have less space to ourselves than we used to. Many of us are experiencing even less intimacy than we were before. We had lots of space to spend with our partners, and we got lots of one-on-one time with them and lots of attention. We were kind of the most sought-after being in the house in certain ways. And then all of a sudden, these beautiful little ones come along, And suddenly, you know, we're pushed to the back of the line when it comes to connection and intimacy. And so it's really challenging. We can often feel like a third wheel, especially when the kids are really young and are breastfeeding or receiving a lot of the care from the mother. And also many old wounds are reopened. You know, we watch our little ones being held and being cared for so beautifully by our partners, and it can't help to reactivate some of the ways that we weren't exactly held and attended to and cared for in the ways that we had hoped when we were young. And these wounds, you know, are old buttons that live inside our unconscious that we're often not very aware of. So even though it's beautiful to watch our little ones be cared for so delicately and so well taken care for, things also can get stirred up and activated and make us feel, you know, feel the holes in our being, again, about holding, about support, about care, and sometimes about our own values, since the attention's all on the kids. So that's all to say that, you know, there are a lot of needs that aren't being met, you know, when we pop into this new situation of being fathers. And also we have way more responsibilities than we've ever had in our lives. In addition to all the things that we were taking care of before our children came, we've had to really up our game and start taking care of a whole household and making sure that there's enough support, especially in the early years, for the mom and the baby to really rest into that loving dual unity. So there's just a lot more responsibilities. And so sometimes, especially to the masculine mind, it can feel like we're failing all over the place, not doing our jobs as well as we used to, not being as focused as we used to be at our jobs, not moving towards our purpose in life as efficiently or as quickly as we would hope, not being the kind of dad we always hoped we would be, you know, dropping the ball on that from time to time, failing our partners in certain ways. And, of course, this isn't really failing because we're being pushed over our edge, but that's sometimes how our judgmental mind can kind of take it. So this is all to say that fatherhood is very challenging and very difficult at times. But one of the gifts in it is now we understand. You know, now we know why our dads were so frustrated, why they were so angry, why they had all these outbursts, you know, why they were so checked out sometimes. We get the pressures that they were facing, and of course we wish that they had stepped up in ways a little bit more than they did and were there for us a little bit more, because we feel the hurts more than the attunements. But now we get it. Now we know a little bit of what it's about to be in that pressure cooker situation. And so when we hear the words coming out of our mouths that our dads used to yell and we can't believe we're just like our dad, we need some self-compassion. We need to bring some heart to the situation and say, yeah, Dad, I get it. Say to yourself, hey, this is really hard, you know. But the other beautiful thing about this is at the same time we're being pressured and all these challenges are coming down on us, we have the most precious beings in the world right in front of us. You know, that saying that your children make you feel like your heart is outside of your body. I think many of us feel how true that is. And that really draws us beyond ourselves and really draws us into being our best selves as much as we possibly can. So we really stretch and do our best for our children. So that's why I think this is fatherhood is kind of a perfect storm. And again, motherhood, parenthood, the same thing. It's all part of the same big picture, that this is kind of a perfect storm to help grow us up. So I thought I'd get a little bit specific into some of the gifts, some of the qualities that fathers or the fathering figures bring into the household. And what I'm talking about here is kind of the archetypal father situation or the fathering figure. You know, some the qualities that are associated a little bit more with masculinity rather than femininity. And I do want to say that at times mothers will embody these qualities as well. I think one of the great things about this day and age is that people are really whole. You know, we don't just shift into the roles of being a guy or a girl or a mother or a father. We really have become much more whole people, meaning that we can shift into masculine and feminine energies with more ease, depending on the needs of the situation. So these things I'm about to say, mothers can also embody these qualities as well. And I don't mean to suggest that this is just about the father, the biological father, whoever's a fathering figure, whoever has that archetypal masculine energy in the home, that's who I'm referring to. So it can be two women, two men, any kind of relationship. So here are some of the gifts that I see that fathers or the fathering figure tends to bring to the home. Number one, they can really bring, we can bring, a holding for the family. Particularly in the early years, if we hold down the fort, if we make sure everything's taken care of around the house, if we make sure all the bills are paid and the money's flowing and all of the practical details of life are taken care of so that our partners can really relax into that feminine holding and really get into the, again, that dual unity with the child and create a very nourishing environment for the child, they need to not be up in their heads and worried about 1,000 practical details. So the fathering figure can really step in and do all the practical things that need to happen and hold the family so that that nourishment can happen, particularly in the early years. Another quality we bring is that of protection. You know, we protect the family from, you know, invasion, you know, say, you know, obviously physically we can protect if there's any kind of threat out there. But we can also just make sure that our home life is safe and not invaded from even things like too much media, too many things that make the home unhealthy. So we can be this kind of strong protective force. And sometimes, even for the child, especially as they grow, we can even be protection for the child from maternal elements that would keep the child from taking risks, from going out in the world and being adventuresome and falling down and scraping their knees and developing some resilience. You know, sometimes the mothering energy is that of, no, stay safe, let me keep you here, I need to keep you protected. Whereas the father sometimes can intervene and say, you know, we're going out, where it's time for an adventure, you know, and of course you have to negotiate that kind of optimal distance and safety and those things. But I remember feeling very grateful that my dad stepped in from my mom, because I was the firstborn and she was very worried about me going out into the world. So my dad protected me from too much constriction and holding and expressed a certain confidence in me and my being out in the world. Fathers also bring a real strength and courage and steadfastness to the family, you know, kind of embodying the qualities of, hey, this needs to be done, even though it's difficult, even though we would, you know, rather give up right now and we'd rather take a nap or cry or whatever it may be. Sometimes you just need to kind of pull it together and say, hey, this is what needs to be done for the good of the family. And the more you embody that quality, the more the child can kind of see that and say, hey, there are real times to pull it together and do what needs to be done rather than sinking into emotion. At the same time, of course, there's huge value to being able to sink into the emotions, to feel them fully. So there has to be a balance, but this is one half of that balance. Another thing that the fathering energy often brings is a lot of roughhousing, physical energy and excitement. I think it's especially great when kids can throw their full weight at a strong masculine figure and know that they can't hurt them or knock them down. Or, you know, I just remember that feeling of, I loved throwing my body against my dad and knowing that he could take all that I could give him. There was something so great about that. And that way I could be full with my energy and my excitement. Of course, you know, by the time I got around 8 years old, you know, we had to switch gears a little bit. But it's great feeling that strong, steadfast quality, that physical presence. Fathers can bring a real matter-of-factness, a real firmness and a real solidity to situations as well that are a kind of support for children so that they can push off of something out into the world. So there are times, of course, you know, when a child falls down, say, off their bike or something, and they're starting to have a good cry, where it's great to pull them up on your lap and let them have that good cry and hold them until their tears finish, until they turn and get back on the bike themselves. That's one great way of doing it. But other times, it's great when the child falls, skins the knee, has that little momentary pause of which way do I want to go with this, and the confidence of the father says, you know, you all right? Even though they're asking the question, there's a firmness and a solidity that says, I have confidence that you're all right. I know that you can do this. And the child may take that cue and say, yeah, I got it, you know, brush themselves off and get out and go back into the world. So there's something great about the solidity and firmness of masculinity that helps children push off from the maternal orbit into the world with a sense of adventure and a sense of confidence. You know, we can really see in them parts of themselves that they didn't know existed by expressing confidence and by saying, you know, stick with it, stick with it. I know you can do this. Yep, you're frustrated. I see it, but stick with it. And then, you know, after, say, for my three-year-old, after, you know, 35 seconds of frustration and trying to get the seatbelt into the little thing, click, it goes in, and they're like, ah, I did it, you know. And there's so many things in life like that that we wish people had more confidence in us and stretched us a little bit. And that's one of the things that we can do with our fathering energy. There can also be guidance and a kind of loving demand on people. Same kind of thing, you know, like I see what you can develop into. You know, actually the word respect can go kind of both ways. You know, you can... When you respect somebody, the word actually means to look again. Spectare is to look. So you look again. So you have maybe a reaction to what they're saying, and you stop. And out of respect, you look deeper. What are they saying? What are they feeling? Let me really get with them and listen to what they're saying, as Patty was pointing out to, with that deep quality of listening that they talk about in hand-in-hand parenting. But there's also another meaning of it. Spectare means to see the spirit in something. And so oftentimes, if we look again, a child may be collapsing into their more fearful emotions and taking themselves to be smaller and less capable than they actually are. And sometimes we can look a little deeper and say, all right, how do I lovingly guide and pull this situation along so that the child actually, that it becomes revealed to the child that they are bigger than they think they are. So I call this kind of a loving demand. You know, if you can lovingly guide somebody to a new place in life, it's quite a masculine quality. Another good one is compassion. And there's different kinds of compassion, so I want to be real clear about what I'm talking about here in terms of compassion. Sometimes people take compassion to mean making somebody feel better. So somebody gets hurt by a friend, say they didn't get invited to a sleepover or something like that, and some people just want to make the child feel better. Oh, no, it's okay, sweetie, they must have forgot, or, you know, they ran out of invitations, or here's some ice cream, let's not worry about it. And you try to emotionally soothe the child and get them out of their painful state. That can be considered a kind of emotional compassion. And a deeper kind of compassion always involves the truth. So in this situation where a child didn't get invited to the sleepover, you know, the child might come back and is really upset, and you bring them up onto your lap and you let them cry, but you never let go of the truth that that was hurtful, that that was difficult. So during the cry, you might just bring them up on your lap and you use your kindness to help soothe. You don't have to use a lot of words. You don't have to do a lot of rubbing or anything specific. You just hold them. But you come with a very kind heart. You come with a groundedness. You come with a sense of spaciousness, and let them have their tears. And then when things kind of wind down in terms of the tears, the conversation that you have with them can be very much include the truth of that hurt, the truth of the pain that came. Not blaming the other child, not going off on a tangent in any direction or the other, but just, yes, it hurts to be excluded. I know, my love, it hurts. And in this way, you're right there with the child. You're feeling their pain. You're feeling where they're at, but in the background again is the sense of confidence that they can handle it. And this helps them integrate the pain, integrate the truth, whatever difficulty they're facing. It's the kindness and the groundedness and the spaciousness that allows them to hold the whole truth of the situation and therefore digest it and integrate it into their being. So there's a certain masculine quality needed for that kind of compassion that can be right there with the truth and not cover it up. So those are some of the qualities and capacities, I think, that fathers bring. Patty, do you have any others off the top of your head that you'd like to include before I move on to the next section?
No, I think I'd love to hear what else you have to say. This is a really good, interesting list. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, sounds good. So this next section is basically, I just want to talk about some of the natural dynamics that we all work with when we're having a tough time. And this is, I think, really important because if any of you fathers out there are like me, you know, this has been tough. This last 5 to 6 years with the kids has been the hardest time of my life and the most joyful and the deepest for sure. But definitely I'm pushed over my edge now than I ever was in my life. And I went through medical school and residency, which were, you know, really, really hard. So this is a whole new level for me. But one thing I've become, I've started to understand is that my system, down in my limbic system, my unconscious assessment of what's going on, automatically gears me up for a set of reactions when I'm not getting my needs met or when I'm fearful or when I'm having a difficult time. And there's not much I can do about this internal set of dynamics except understand them and recognize them as quickly as possible so as to work with them in an intelligent way. The bottom line here is we can't get rid of these core reactions that are in our psyche. And so, again, my suggestion is to get comfortable, get intimate with these core reactions so that you can begin to recognize them and then work with them in an intelligent way. And in the second half of the talk, hopefully through all of your questions, we can get at specifically some of the ways to work with these reactions. So here are the three basic dynamics. And see if you can think about your own life and see these play out in your own life. The three basic reactions when we're afraid or when we're facing separation, meaning we're not feeling connection or we're not getting any need met, the limbic system moves us in three directions. The first one is to get busy to try to make everything work out right, to try to please everyone, to keep everything happy and light. We're just trying to be good here, quote unquote. And you know, some of you can say, well, what's wrong with that? Isn't that good to kind of please everybody and make everything work well and be good? Well, on the surface, it can seem that way, except there's so much anxiety in it. Underlying it, there's so much fear and anxiety that people can fear that, feel that, and they feel the tension in the air, and something's off. You know, their limbic system actually registers, you know, what's going on with Dad? Something's off here. He's, you know, a little bit frantic, a little bit busy, you know, there's some kind of subtle control in this. What's going on? And the other downside is if people don't recognize how good we're being and how wonderful we're being, then we can get really pissed off, you know, because, geez, we weren't getting our needs met. Then we went the extra mile, and then no one noticed again. And then it's like, ugh, you know, we can get really hurt and angry. So that's the first gear, is to seek out others and try to make things right, to try to please. The second direction that the limbic system goes is frustration increases into becoming very controlling of others and often aggressive. So this is the situation when, you know, the toys are on the floor. How about this? Have you ever noticed that some days you can come home and toys can be on the floor and you don't care? You know, you kiss your wife, you play with the kids, you're just having a great day. Everything's fine. Next day you come home, same situation, toys are on the floor, and you're just really pissed off. You're so frustrated, and you can't believe the lack of respect from the kids and from your wife and everybody for leaving the toys all over the floor. There's a big reaction of anger and aggression. Well, this happens a lot of times when, you know, other issues are going on below the surface. Maybe you're feeling really not connected to your wife for a long period of time, or maybe you got chewed out at work. Who knows what it is? But the point here is this is one of the reactions. We can get really angry, really aggressive and controlling. This is where we start yelling at the kids, or we start yelling at our wives, or maybe we even turn the aggression on ourselves in self-attack. There's a lot of inner critic energy inside us where we can really get all over ourselves and attack ourselves. So this is the second kind of movement down in the limbic system. The third movement is to shut down and withdraw. So you might still be there in the room, but nobody can touch you. You're kind of just disappeared into your book, perhaps, or into the TV, or just off in your own world. You're just really shut down. Or maybe you actually get up and leave the room. You head off to your man cave because you have some quote-unquote work to do, right? So dads do this a lot. Dads disappear. They are hurt. They don't know where they fit in. They're having trouble. They're about to yell, and they don't want to yell, and so they disappear. This is kind of the third reaction in the nervous system. So hopefully you can see yourself in some of these reactions and just recognize, again, that there's not much you can do about this in terms of changing these automatic reactions. The only thing you can do is become aware of them and then add something to them, add some intelligent intervention that'll benefit not only you in the way you want to be a father, but your children and your family as well. One of the keys to all of this is, the first key is awareness. Okay, you have to find ways to recognize, here it comes, I'm starting to do that pleasing thing, I'm trying to make everybody happy and be really playful, I'm hitting one of those gears of reactivity. What's going on here? What's happening underneath the surface? So mindfulness practice, the ability to intentionally pay attention to the present moment and be aware of what's actually going on right now is huge. And in our book, Mindful Discipline, we offer 15 mindful awareness practices to help you recognize some of these reactions and work with them. The other big key to this is the ability to tolerate vulnerability. And this is one of those things that as males we really, really struggle with. It actually turns out that in general, males, and I work with babies when they first come out of the womb, so I know this very intimately, males are actually often more sensitive than females. We're a very sensitive half of the species. And because the world is so overwhelming to us early on in life, in addition to the social injunctions about how we should be as men, we tend to shut off that vulnerability rather quickly and protect ourselves. And in one way, this is really natural and healthy and normal. In another way, it cuts us off from our aliveness. It cuts us off from our sensitivity in terms of being aware of what's going on with our children and our partners and ourselves. It cuts us off from being full with our emotions, expressing our emotions fully. There's so many ways that not being in touch with our vulnerability and not being able to tolerate a certain degree of vulnerability just really cuts off our life force and our natural dynamic intelligence that we would otherwise use in this fathering occasion. So that's what I would bring it back to in mindful discipline. We talk a lot about this, and when I work with clients, this is the area that I really focus on. How can we help you tolerate more vulnerability? Because all of the keys, all of the quote-unquote answers from us parent experts are actually down there in that, what Jack Kornfield calls the naturally wise and loving heart. So if we can get into those layers of vulnerability and sink into this fullness of heart, pretty much all the answers of parenting just become intuitive and natural. So that's the way I work with people, is try to help them back into this naturally wise and loving heart. So I think this is a good place to stop. Maybe I could turn it over to Patty, and maybe Patty, you can talk about listening partnerships and the importance of sharing some of these real painful, difficult situations that fathers get into with another person, and how and why that can be helpful.
Well, sure. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah.
I guess the first thing to say is that, you know, we. Dads love big, and dads love well, and that it's really. I've listened to a lot of parents over 40 years, thousands of parents for, you know, tens of thousands of hours, and I really have not ever really been with a parent who didn't have, you know, a lot of love for their children and you know, good intentions. However, sort of shackled they might be in terms of being able to show that love or I don't know, show where things hurt for them, that love is there. And it's just, I don't know. So I think what helps us with the sort of the reactive part of parenting, the part that makes you want to shut down and go away, or the part that makes us angry, is the solution that we offer is what we call listening partnerships, getting together with another parent who's going to understand because they're a parent. You know, they might be parenting differently than you, and they might even have a whole different background or, you know, very different life experiences, but they love their child and they want to do well by their child. And I think all of us need times and places where we can really think about how is parenting going? How am I feeling as a dad? How am I feeling as a mom? You know, what's great about, you know, what happened this last week and what was really, really hard. And just, you know, being able to tell somebody what goes on in your life, not to have to look good in front of this person, but to really be able to say, yeah, I did this better than I've ever done it before. This was a really hard thing. And then, you know, 2 hours later, oh my gosh, look what I did then. Because all of us lose it. We all lose it as parents, no matter how put together we look when we, you know, take our kids, you know, out on the street and, you know, to enjoy playing in the park or going to church or temple. No matter how good we look on the outside, we're all pretty frazzled on the inside because the conditions of parenting are not easy. There should be a whole lot more help and support than there is. So we'd like to get parents together to listen to one another for maybe 15 minutes each way or maybe a half an hour each way. It's amazing what a difference it makes just to have someone listen to you, not interrupt and not tell you what to do, not tell you what they think about your parenting situation. And, you know, sometimes it's a very simple thing to do, but it's really, really hard because as soon as another parent starts telling you what they face, you've had experiences somewhat similar to theirs, and, you know, you remember last week when XYZ happened, and you figured it out, and you want to tell them, oh, all you have to do is this, you know, when actually, you know, they may not be able to pull that off. And what they need to do is just tell you it's hard, be accepted for who they are, have your full attention, be respected for the, you know, the effort they're making, and to let it all brew in their mind so that they can begin to think, well, you know, maybe I don't have to do it this way. Maybe I could do it this way. It's like that, you know, real change in our parenting happens in our own mind, in our own hearts, because somebody listens to us and lends us their confidence that we can figure it out. And in a way, that's what we want to do with our children. We want to listen to them and lend them our confidence that they will figure it out. And we need to set limits sometimes, you know, to keep everybody safe and to keep them from, you know, going too far off track. But when we set limits, we offer them our confidence that they will, you know, blast those bad feelings out and then be able to think a whole lot better and act more in concert with everybody else in the family. And this happens over and over again. And it works that way for parents, too. So if I tell you what makes me want to strangle my kids, you know, and I express that and I just go ahead and say what my frustration is like and talk about my cousin Jimmy who, you know, got arrested at the age of 18, and I'm so afraid my child is going to be just like him. You know, all the projections that I have into the future, all my worries, if I tell all that and can laugh a little bit, and can cry a little bit, to really release the feelings inside, when I go back home, I'm not as easily triggered, and I feel like somebody gets who I am and what I'm up to. And you build a relationship like that, it just, you are not so alone in parenting, and it creates a path forward because you can get rid of tension that otherwise sits with you and trips you up day after day after day. You actually can get rid of it with the kind attention of some other person who doesn't have to solve it for you and who shouldn't really try, so that you can figure it out yourself. So it's a way of changing the load in your limbic system so that you're not carrying as much easily triggered upset from day to day. And it does slowly but surely change how reactive we are. And it allows us to, because someone is being thoughtful and compassionate and respectful towards us, we take that and we can then be compassionate and more respectful and more thoughtful towards our children and our partners. It's just, you know, what goes into your tank then can come out in very useful times and very useful ways in your family. So I mean, I'm a mom, I'm not a dad, but I just know that the first, the first month that I got, you know, a listening partnership once a week, my kids had not been sleeping, and therefore I had not been sleeping, and I didn't do anything different about sleep or how we went to bed or what I fed them or anything, but I got listened to for an hour a week by someone who was also a parent, who was also in a real bind. And his listening for me, I don't know what happened, but within 3 weeks my kids started sleeping through the night. It's like I was just a more relaxed person. And that was conveyed to them, and they became more relaxed people. And it's kind of amazing the kinds of changes that can happen when you get listened to, when somebody just lets your mind do what it needs to do, to talk about what it needs to talk about. So we have, you know, we have resources on listening partnerships, and there's a video course that you can take to learn how to do it. It's got examples of lots of dads and moms doing listening with one another from all different backgrounds with all different kinds of family situations, everywhere from one child to eight children, everywhere from living with your children to having been separated from them for many years but still in touch. There's some really pretty examples of effective listening that makes a difference in people's lives. And we also have a little book that, you know, it tells you the same thing. You just don't get all those gorgeous examples of audio and visual, you know, chances to see how listening works.
Right. So much is communicated through the face and the interactions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out a couple of things about that. Number one is to make clear that the outer actions, what you actually do with your children, are important, but unless you get that, I think you used the word limbic load. If you don't lessen the limbic load and integrate the emotions, all your actions, your outer actions, will be less effective. They just won't land as trustable to your children. And so it's really important that everybody does both, that they find relationships, that they can integrate these emotions, that they feel held. Also important, I think, Patty, is discriminating who is the person who I can trust to just listen and to not give me advice, because this conversation is about relationship and emotional integration, not about fixing, not about problem solving. You can have those conversations too, but keep those separate. You know, make sure they don't leak into this, because it will take the power out of the emotional integration and the processing of the emotions.
Yeah. We like to recommend that people get listened to first, and then on their drive home, think about what they're going to do, but not try to use a listener to get it all planned out. You know, what am I going to do when I get home, and how is it going to go? It's like when our minds are tight like that, trying to squeeze a solution out of a situation, we don't get any release. We don't get any relief. It's better to just go, oh, hell, I have no idea what I'm going to do, but here's how I feel, you know. God, I feel awful, and here's how I feel. Or I am so frustrated, you know. And just go there. It's like, don't try to be a reasonable, rational person every moment of every day. It's not a fun way to live.
Right. It's an impossible way to live. I agree.
So, yeah, are you ready to take some questions, Chris?
Yeah, let's open it up.
Okay. So if you have a question about, you know, your situation or how to apply the ideas that Chris was laying out, press star 2 and we'll see what your question is, and try to take as many questions as we can. So star 2. Okay, Chris, I'm going to offer a question.
All right.
So I'm assuming that there's at least one mom on the call. And I know that some moms will be listening, wanting to know how they can support, you know, their partners as dads. And do you have a few sort of brief ideas there?
Yeah, sure. One of the biggest things, I think, and I kind of alluded to this in the beginning of the call, is that, and I know, first of all, that you mothers are facing this same thing. But one of the toughest experiences for me as a dad is all of a sudden dropping to the back of the line when it comes to attention. You know, I was so well cared for by my wife before we had children, and in every moment where she has time and energy, she still, you know, really deeply cares for me. But it's, you know, the kids always come first. And so that's really hard, and that's really painful. And just know that hour after hour, day after day, even though that this is what we're supposed to do as fathers, that we're hurting and trying to overcome our hurt of being, you know, basically facing separation, not feeling like we matter as much, not feeling the flow of love, certainly the juiciness and the aliveness, the sensuality, the sexuality often, you know, drops off significantly. The time for real intimacy where we can share our secrets and our deepest hearts. There's just so many ways that we start to feel separated from you, our partners, and there's just little things you can do to help us with that, because we're trying really hard. We get it at the cognitive level that you've got a lot on your plate, that your body's uncomfortable, you're being clawed at by the children all day long. You know, we totally get it at the head level, but the heart doesn't. You know, the heart just hurts and longs for that connection. So, you know, one of the things you can do, and dads are just as responsible for this, whenever somebody comes through the door, when you haven't seen each other for a while, of course the children are the first faces that you see, and they get the first hugs and first attention because, you know, they're small and they can't hold off that hurt as well as we can. So we give them the attention first and we love them up. But sometimes we end up slipping by our wives and not making real contact, or just starting right in on what's for dinner, or do I need to pick up this, or the practicalities. Stop and take a moment, both the wives towards the men and the men towards the wives, to make eye contact, to feel each other from your heart, to check in just real briefly, you know, how was your day? Make that moment of contact, that front-to-front, especially the bodily hugs where you can put the front of your bodies connected and take a few breaths together as you hug, can completely set the tone of the night or the day or whatever it is, and help us deal with, you know, our typical hurts. Because our heart, when it enters those situations, it's always looking, which way am I going to go? Can I stay open and vulnerable here? Or do I need to close down in order to function and get through the rest of the night? And it happens like that. It happens so fast. And so there's things we can do, just making contact in the beginning. Even if you're tired, even if you're annoyed that he forgot the eggs, even if, you know, you're pissed off about last night, go ahead and just take that, you know, 10 to 20 seconds, make the contact, set the tone, and then again, of course, you can deal with whatever you need to deal with. So that's one thing. Similarly, you know, when dads lose their cool, when they yell at the kids, or when they put down a boundary that you think is kind of ridiculous, and, you know, you realize that he's controlling and, you know, this isn't necessary, don't cross him right there. Kind of let it go, let it work itself out, and away from the kids, connect with them and express some understanding that you know he's going through a tough time right now and that you get where he's coming from. You can kind of do a shorter version of this listening partnership, which is just coming alongside him. You know, are you okay? You know, how was your day? Was it rough? You know, how can I help? Just like you would a really good friend, use your manners, use your respect, use softness to come alongside, because we're hurting in those moments too. We may yell and we may act like it's all about the toys on the floor and, you know, the kids disrespecting us and yada, yada, yada. Deep down, we're like, Jesus, I'm yelling again. I can't believe I'm doing this. Well, who's supporting me, you know? We're kind of in this frustrated, difficult state too, and we're a little out of control. So what we need in that moment is a friend. We need somebody to come alongside us and help us. And, of course, later, you know, when the kids are in bed, you can have a fuller conversation. You know, sit on the couch and, you know, really get at what's going on. And hopefully, you know, the dads will have the courage and the vulnerability to say, you know, I've just been missing you. I'm so sad that we haven't had time in 2 weeks to really connect and be together. And I'm just really hurting right now. And it comes out as anger towards the kids. It comes out as frustration and aggression. And I don't want to be like this. I don't want to be like my dad. But this is what's happening right now. And just the understanding, just the being seen in that vulnerable place, just having some tears and holding hands during times like this can totally reset the situation. And then again, you can have conversations for possibility and action later. You know, how can we do things different? How can we set things up different? But that's later, and that's secondary mm-hmm. to this emotional processing. Oftentimes, like you alluded to, Patty, nothing needs to be done when the good cry comes. You know, just mm-hmm. being heard, having the good cry, sinking into those vulnerable tears, coming to the rest at the end of the good cry, and then the system emerges out the other side more heartfelt, more spacious, more loving, more attuned, more courageous. All kinds of new qualities come out of that empty space at the end of vulnerability. And so dads need to have the courage to express the vulnerability, but they also need to see in front of them a safe place in which they can actually express that. And that starts with not being criticizing, not being disappointed in them, those kind of things, being there for them so they can really express their emotions and be vulnerable. Because I think, ladies, you admit this is ultimately what you want, right? You'd rather have a strong, vulnerable man than a man who's got a hard shell and who is angry and frustrated all the time or shut down, right?
Yeah.
Well, this is
yeah.
where you can help. You can help bring them into this layer of vulnerability. But they need to feel safe, and they need to know that you're, you know, there to listen to them and that you're on their team.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you. That was so eloquently said. And I just will say that, you know, as a as a mom who's been guilty of, you know, feeling very critical, yet, you know, here's again where listening partnerships make a huge difference. If I have a place where I can jump up and down about, you know, the perfect life I wish I had. it really, I mean, it's like I get to let go of that load, and often it's really more about, you know, the fears that I've carried from my childhood, from the times when I was intimidated, you know, as a child, and then it's easy to feel intimidated again from, you know, just by from someone that you love, when actually there's no danger, and there's no, you know, the situation is not the dire the way it was when you were a child, but mm-hmm. you sure feel it that way, and you feel for your children, and get very much more alarmed than the situation calls for, and the way you, you know, the way you defuse that situation is just to have a listening partner and go after it there, so that you are more tolerant of, you know, people who are, you know, loving your children but not the, exactly the way you think it should be done. So moms
right.
always have an exact way they think it should be done, very
right.
often.
Right.
So we've got a question here. Let me open up. So if you press star 2, your mic is open. Go ahead and ask. Hello?
Oh, hello? Can you hear
yeah,
me?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, hi. My name is John from the Boston area. I have a 6-year-old daughter and a 3.5-year-old boy. And my daughter, she's been diagnosed with a sensory processing disorder. And she's been, you know, real tough from the get-go. And lately she's been really, really violent. And sometimes, you know, we don't mind it when it's toward myself or my wife. But when it's toward Tom, he's just, you know, he's a sweet little boy. And when it's toward him, it really triggers my past when I was bullied as a kid. So instead of, like, holding together with her, like, trying to see her hurt, you know, because I'm, you know, my wife and I, you know, we follow the hand-to-hand principles. You know, we know she's hurting. I feel all this rage from when I was a kid getting bullied. And I want to, you know, I just want to react to it. So I really have a tough time, you know, seeing the hurt in her instead of, you know, I feel like it's all happening again to me, you know. So I'm just having a hard time dealing with that.
Right. Well, that's a real challenging situation, John. And I get it. I think all of us, mothers and fathers, when we see the younger sibling get hurt by the older sibling, it's somebody hurting our baby. And
right.
There's something just very primal in that, that the rage just comes. It doesn't matter
yeah.
who it is.
right,
but it's,
yeah.
it's as you're feeling, it's kind of a double bind. But all of a sudden, the rage is now directed at somebody that you love more than anybody in the world, your daughter, right?
Right?
So
yep.
so it's
right.
a very tricky situation. That's the first thing to
yep.
say is like, okay, this is, again, one of those perfect storms, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a real hard situation that there isn't an easy solution to. One of the things that I started to do, because I have a six-year-old and a three-year-old as well, and when the older one was hurting the younger one, I used to, same thing, get a lot of rage. I started doing this practice that I call grounding down. Because when we get really angry that somebody's hurting our child and we get protective, a lot of times the energy, can you feel it, comes up high in the chest and in the arms and in the face.
Mm-hmm.
You get real
right.
red. Hey! And it's kind of an overpowering, you know, you're trying to get over somebody and scare them down.
Right.
And as you probably intuit, that scares the hell out of your six-year-old who's already having a tough time with her feelings, right? So there is a more integrated way I've found of bringing a strong, clear, protective force that's all about protecting the child but not hurting the aggressor here.
Mm-hmm.
And that practice I call grounding down. So as soon as you feel that happen and you feel the energy start to come up high, and this will take you many, many times of practice before you get good at it, as you go, hey, let that be your marker for breathe down through your body. Get your energy low into your legs. Get a weighted sense where you're feeling your belly full as you walk over through the floor towards her. And then when you get there, get down low so she can feel you're with her, on the same level with her, still strong and protecting the child, but clear to her that you're not going to hurt her. You're back integrated and you're low instead of above her right now.
Right.
And you let her know, I can't have you hit him. I see you're frustrated right now, you know, but you cannot hurt him. And then, you know, maybe she cries. I don't know. Does she ever cry when you get really angry at her?
Not really. She's
not
a tough
really?
Little kid. She's really, you know, she's she's a little, you know, kind of belligerent. And, you know, lately she's picked up on some of the four-letter words we've used over the past few years. You know, that's been a little bit of a problem with her lately. But you know, she's really tenacious. She's, you know, I spent, you know, it seemed like 2 hours. It was literally probably a good 10 minutes keeping her away from Tom, my son, because she was just hell bent and causing him harm. You know, I just had to restrain her. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
I just had to hold her, and sometimes when I hold her, like, you know, try to do the play thing, like, you know, come on over here, bounce her up and down, I'm like, I get this rage in my eyes, but I'm like, I'm trying to play with her, and I'm squeezing her, and I'm like, I'm taking that frustration out, you know, I'm squeezing her, but, you know, not too tight, obviously, but I'm trying to do the play thing, and, you know, and,
right.
She just,
so that's really challenging, because it sounds like she has a tough shell, a reactive shell. She won't sink into her vulnerability. A lot of times when you get really angry at kids and yell at them, they'll sink into their tears, and then you can really hold them. But it sounds like she goes into more reactivity and defensiveness.
Yeah.
And that comes out as I'm gonna get Tom, you know, I'm gonna do that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have to be absolutely clear, like you're doing, that she cannot hurt him. And if you have to put her in another room or whatever it takes to protect him, you know, I think that clarity and firmness is really healthy for her. So her energy at some point can shift in a different direction. I don't know which way, and I'm not there in the situation, but
sure.
A firm, firm, clear boundary, especially with you low in your body, will help her energy shift in a different direction at some point. But the second
thing she can hear is that when children have sensory processing disorders, in general, the way it looks to me is that there's just a big wad of fear in there, just a great big wad of fear. And so they're experiencing a gigantic trauma. And who knows when that trauma happened. It's not happening right now when her little brother touched her, you know, toy. It's like the trauma is long ago, but it triggers, you know, huge amounts of feelings. And I think that it does make sense to, rather than wait for something bad to happen, it does make sense to move in and provide just enough restraint to make sure that, so that you are unafraid that he's going to get hurt. Because when you're afraid, it doesn't help her. It's kind of like you need to move in soon enough and with enough of a physical barrier that you're not afraid that he's going to get hurt, so that you can lend your confidence to her while she goes ahead and has, you know, has this emotional reaction. So one way you can do that is to, you know, pick a child up and bring her into a different room, you know, sit down in front of the door. You don't have to hold her, but you put her where she can't get to him. And there you are for the rest of the emotional reaction. And the child is going to tell you you're a horrible parent. You know, they need to get out. You know, they sort of become lawyers at this point. You know, you're, you know, I have my rights, and all, there's all kinds of arguments why they should get to roam the house freely, and destroy whom they please. And you just can say, you know, you're, you know, I need to stay here. I don't want to keep you in this room. What I usually say to a child who's like beyond the beyond emotionally is, I don't want to have to do this, you know. And as soon as things are different, I will stop. You will get out of this room. It is going to be different. You're not going to feel this way forever. And then just sort of be with them, is kind of anchor them through the experience. It's like you can't, once that big wad of fear has come up, a child can't put it away. And you can't change it. It's like there isn't surgery that will take that take that away from the child. But
Because a lot of times, you know, when that, you know, after they had like an episode, like, you know, she's attacked him, you know, we'll go through the whole process of what you just described, and she'll say, you know, I want to be, you know, I want to stay with her through her painful phase, but she, you know, she'll just want to be alone.
Right.
You know, so I'm kind of conflicted. So, you know, she'll run into her room and shut the door, and I'll stay outside the door, but if she knows I'm out there, she doesn't like it. So I'm like, I mean, do I stay with her no matter what? Do I give her space?
No. You let her know that you're there for her in whatever way she needs you to be there for her.
Even though I'm outside the door.
Yeah, separation does not have to be, I mean, connection does not have to be physical. And some people find it too vulnerable when you're in their physical space. So you let her know through tone of voice and through what you say, that, you know, I'm here for you. I am, you know, either I'm right outside the door, or I, you know, I'm going to be sitting on the couch and I'm going to be thinking about you the whole time, you know, that I'm there. I'm going to give you your space, but my heart is connected to your heart. You want to let her know you're available and that you're with her in the way that feels comfortable to her.
Okay.
And, of course, you have to kind of feel past her emotionality to a certain degree and figure out what's the optimal distance as well, you know.
Right.
Not every time somebody says, leave me alone, they actually mean leave me alone, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a real dance. It's tough.
Yeah, because I think I
think we parents sort of expect that if we do the right thing, a child's feelings will subside.
Yeah.
And actually, when you pay attention to a child whose feelings have been ignited, it makes the feelings more intense, and it makes their panic deeper. And pretty soon, if you're paying good attention, they'll go very, very deep into that fear. And all of a sudden, sometimes they feel like they're dying, or they can't catch their breath, or they have to get out of this room, otherwise, you know, something dire will happen. They have to have a drink of water. Get me a drink of water. I can't go one more minute without a drink of water. And when a child has gotten to that deeply panicked state, when you're in there paying attention, and I generally think that some kind of visual contact is usually helpful, but it doesn't have to be physical contact. There are exceptions to this, but then the child is doing very deep work on whatever it was that frightened them that badly, and you don't want to run go get the glass of water. You don't want to run go get, you know, a sprayer so she can cool off. You know, if she's really, really panicked and demanding something quickly, you can just say, we can do that. We'll do that in about 15 minutes or so. You know, we'll do it at a different time. Or I will pick you up and take you to the sprayer. Or I will pick you up and we will go together to get some water. When you propose to pick them up and go get the thing that they so ardently desire together, you'll get huge amounts more feeling, and they won't care about the water. It's like they do not want the water. They just want to not have to feel this panicked. And in general, the way children come out of a deep panic like that, when someone has been paying attention, when someone has anchored them through it, is they generally come out able to be much freer of the rigid behavior that had them trapped before. Like, I know children have come at us who stopped being obsessive compulsive about washing their hands. You know, if they can get in and have one of those really deep fear episodes and really go deeply into the panic, you know, they don't have to wash their hands for the next 5 days. It just relieves a lot of pent up tension in there to be guided through that and to not have the parent get scared of what you're scared of.
Right.
So
we've noticed that.
Clearly, you need to use judgment, and clearly not every parent can do this. If you get angry or you get triggered, then you need to just get up and go away and not try to be there for your child. It's like that's the deal. It's like you have to vow when your child gets to you and they said something that just really, you know, made you upset, that you won't try to listen at that point because you're not able to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. John, the one last thing I'll say is any kind of, once you've established the connection, any kind of softness that you can put, a touch of softness in your voice, leading with the heart. I often let my older child know, you know, buddy, I would protect you too. If anybody came to this house and was hurting you like that, I would protect you like that. I don't let anybody hurt my boys, you know?
Right.
That kind of vulnerability and that softness can actually tip the nervous system in that direction. It won't always happen that way, but your sincerity and your vulnerability can sometimes draw her nervous system in that direction and down that hole as well.
Right. It seems like after the initial attack, like say Kathleen goes after Tom and she's upset about whatever, something ridiculous. The attacks that follow is my wife and I kind of seem to think it's some sort of guilt reaction. You know, she feels guilty about what she just did, and it's kind of it's a self perpetuating type of thing. You know, because oftentimes at night, you know, when my wife is sleeping, putting her down in bed by themselves, you know, she'll confide in her about, you know, she felt sorry about what she did to Tom and all this stuff.
A child's ability to work through the tension that drove them to do something harsh is so much better when you get there first, when the harsh thing didn't happen, when it almost happened but it didn't. And so I think if there are repeated situations, like if she tends to go off, you know, every night before dinner, or, you know, is mean to him at the dinner table, then it could be so constant that you don't have a way to, you know, to guard against all eventualities. But if you see a, you know, regular pattern to it, you know, if they're alone in the room for 5 minutes, then he's hurt. So then you just, you don't leave them alone in the room together for 5 minutes. You know, you put her on your back while you're making dinner, or you just find a way to guard against the situation rather than being surprised by it over and over again. And that can be quite difficult. But
it's almost ironic, like sometimes when they're alone by themselves, they do much better, because when we're involved in it, there's almost like an attention competition going on. You know, so they can be out in the yard playing, and you know, she's a more dominant one. You know, she'll take care of Tom, and you know, she'll look after him. And you know, just tonight, I was trying to get Tom to do something. He wasn't listening to me. She goes, "I'll do it, Dad." She walked up and said, "Tom, do this," and he listened to her right away.
Let her know how good she is with him too. Every time you see him, that'll help balance things out as her superego, her inner critic, starts to really pile on about how bad she is with him. She'll have some defense in there a little bit.
Right.
You know?
She had some pretty like traumatic social changes this year. She went from from a half a day school to a full day of school to a small school to a large school. She went from a Montessori to a charter school. And we weren't expecting that. It was through halfway through the year. So this is a little girl who couldn't be babysat, you know, and we couldn't put her in a stroller for a year and a half. She'd put her in there and she'd be freaking out. She gets so upset sometimes. She would like urinate and throw up. She'd be so upset. It's been a real tough road. She's just really tough with changes. A poor little kid. But
she's coming. That's all along. The time we have right now.
So I'm sorry.
That's okay. Don't be sorry. We're so glad that you woke up.
Stay steady, John. You sound like you're doing great.
Oh, thank you so much.
Good to talk with you.
Thank you.
You as well.
So, Chris, why don't you tell people where they can hear more from you and where they can get more of the wisdom that you offer?
Yeah, online. I have essentialparenting.com is my website. And if you have a direct question that you'd like to speak to me, Chris, C-H-R-I-S, at essentialparenting.com is probably the best way to reach me by email. And like I said, we just wrote a book, Mindful Discipline, my good friend and co-author, Shauna Shapiro, and I, and that just was released, and there's a lot of great stuff in there, so check that out.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure to be with you tonight, Patty. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Chris. One of the many things I appreciate about you is the fact that you are connected with the love and the feelings that you have. You can hear it in your voice when you're talking, and I just appreciate the deep compassion that you bring to talking about parenting. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And on our end, I'd just like to say that we have another free teleconference on Thursday, and it's going to be about building children's confidence through play with Dr. Laura Kaufman. She's lovely, and we're just going to be talking about the important role that play has in helping children feel build their power with us as their foil and their supporters. It's really fun stuff. And we also have a really good self-guided course. It's a video course called Setting Limits and Gaining Cooperation, Building Cooperation. And it's a good primer on setting limits without harshness and setting limits that really work. So the limit isn't fuzzy. You get to not give in and not give up, but you get to give yourself when you're doing a limit. And this shows you how to do that. So we hope people will take a look at handinhandparenting.org and see the cool stuff we have there. So any last words, Chris, for parents, for the dads and moms that have joined us?
Just hang tough and really be gentle with yourself. This is the hardest thing in the world, and I'm sure you're doing a great job, and of course you're not doing it perfectly, but perfect isn't really part of what parenting is about. So enjoy yourselves and be gentle with yourselves.
Thank you so much. And I really want to appreciate, you being with us through this talk. It was really, really good to hear you. Such good guidance there.
Mm.
Okay. Thank you all for coming. And we hope you'll come back and see us again at Hand in Hand.
Yeah.